Welcome to episode 7 of the Shill Report, where journalism is reviewed and the stories of the week are expanded and explained. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me on the quest to shed the light of liberty on the week's news is publisher of We Are Libertarians, Chris Spangle.
Holla.
And managing editor of the We Are Libertarians news site, Joe Ruiz.
Hey there.
Was that a duck call?
My daughter asked me to use her Dora the Explorer mic on the broadcast.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh,
She's 17.
Keep the family happy.
Actually, how old is your daughter?
She's 4 years old.
Okay. All right. So she's not 17.
That makes sense.
It's still adorable.
Right.
There you go. She'll appreciate it. Guys, this has been an interesting week, not only from a media perspective, but a behind-the-scenes perspective as well. Fox News, we're going to jump right into this, has apparently leaked out the fact that Megyn Kelly will be landing the 9 p.m. time slot upon her return from maternity leave. Now, we all know that Sean Hannity is the current occupant of that time slot, so logically speaking, she has bumped Sean Hannity from the coveted 9 p.m. 9 p.m. slot, and she will be the new star, and apparently the Fox News network will be building the network directly around her. Have you guys heard about this, and what are your initial thoughts?
Joe?
I love Megyn Kelly. You know, I don't know that I always agree with Megyn Kelly, and she is very much a Fox News analyst, but something about her comes across as sincere and likable to me, and I've always kind of enjoyed her presence on her show. Getting her in a 9 p.m. time slot. Well, I'll just put it like this. I would rather watch Megyn Kelly than Sean Hannity. Boom.
I don't watch the amount of Fox News that I watch is limited to the occasional viewing of the special report with Brett Baer in the evening. I don't watch Megyn Kelly. I don't watch Sean Hannity. I don't watch really any of their shows. I like hard news and then making up my mind kind of from there. So I don't generally watch a lot of the opinion shows because none of the opinion shows in the evening reflect my opinion at all. So this would not be a great transition for me or really probably anyone listening to this show.
Chris, are you saying Megyn Kelly does not make your news hard?
Stop it. That's inappropriate. It's too soon. So I think the move is probably a good one for Fox News because it limits the amount of old white man that is in their primetime slot. You know, she's an up-and-coming star. She probably has an agent that is forcing their hand a little bit, and they want to put her in a slot that is going to really do well for her. She's well-liked by the people that watch Fox News. I know my grandparents, my 70-year-old grandfather who loves Fox News, loves Megyn Kelly. So does my grandmother, who's 70, and so does my great-aunt, who's 75. So their base viewership really likes Megyn Kelly.
So the geriatric crowd is definitely right into Megyn Kelly.
So, I mean, what 75-year-old man wouldn't like to have Megyn Kelly in the background of their dreams as they nap away in their Lazy Boy at 9 o'clock in the evening? So right, there is rumors that Greta Van Susteren, she is signed to a long-term deal, but there's rumors that Greta Van Susteren is leaving and that they'd push Sean Hannity back, which to me would be, that would be a demotion for Hannity. And Joe can share our opinion on Hannity here in a minute. So that would be a demotion. Greta, I don't get her show. She's like a light version of Nancy Grace. The other rumor is that Shep Smith might be leaving or giving up his 7 p.m. slot, and Hannity would move into that and would be the lead-in for Bill O'Reilly, which would be a promotion in my mind. And Glenn Beck said this week that when Glenn Beck was at Fox News, he and O'Reilly went to Roger Ailes and actually pitched that, so they'd move back from 5 to 7 and then have a strong lead in and really dominate. But, you know, I can't imagine that they'd fire Hannity or demote him because he's got the second highest rated show on cable news in primetime. So I don't know why they'd get rid of him, but he is a one trick pony. He really has one message. And I don't know. It's just unoriginal. And that's why he's having trouble with talk radio as well, Joe.
Yeah, I actually think that Sean Hannity is a fading star in conservative talk, and also with his television show. I think that it takes a little bit of foresight on the part of Fox News to give him a demotion if they are going to keep him around at all. I think it's a good thing. And despite the ratings, and despite probably that geriatric crowd that you were talking about, Ryan, enjoying his programming and giving him those kinds of ratings, I think that I think Fox understands, and I think that a lot of other organizations understand, particularly Clear Channel and Cumulus, who have been negotiating their radio contracts, him and Rush Limbaugh. They understand that he is a fading star, and I think it won't be long before, you know, we all see Sean Hannity go away. And, you know, maybe he'll do something creative, he'll do something clever, like what Glenn Beck did, and starting his own network or something like that, although I doubt it, because I don't think that Sean's nearly as creative as Glenn Beck is. What's that?
Well, I take offense to that comment, Joe. I'm a registered conservative.
He's a registered, yeah, nobody cares. Listen, Sean Hannity, he's only rich when the liberals are in office. If there's a Democrat in office, he has plenty of ammunition, although then that means that for the next 4 years he belabors the point and people get sick and tired of hearing the same thing day in and day out. When there is someone who he agrees with in office, all he is an apologist for people of that political mentality. And I think that it gets irritating even then to people who agree with him. He repeats himself.
He's
so
everything.
How do you think Megyn Kelly will be different?
No, well, here's the difference. Okay, Sean Hannity is everything that's wrong with politics today. He is nothing but, here's the problems with what's going on today, and here's who we should blame. He has almost no solutions. The solutions, he's a mile wide and an inch deep. His solutions are get Democrats out of office. That's what it comes down to. You know, everything is going to be the Democrats' fault. Take problem X, you know, say this is a problem, here's what's miserable, and blame the Democrats for it. Well, in the internet age, when you have so many choices of smart and intelligent information distribution found at WAL-radio.com, then you have to be interesting. I think CNN is going for interesting. I think, you know, Aaron Burnett and Anderson Cooper, you know, they try to reflect a broad range of views. They may have their own point of views. The news may be selected from a liberal point of view, but at the same time, they try to have a broad range. You know, O'Reilly is unpredictable. O'Reilly will surprise you in the times that I've watched O'Reilly. He's tolerable. I can stand him. Rachel Maddow is a person who you can watch because you hate her point of view as a libertarian the majority of the time, but and you always know who she's going to blame the problem on, but she'll actually give you a solution to the problem. Megyn Kelly strikes me as that type of, you know, conservative version of Rachel Maddow, which is probably what they're trying to put up against, you know, a smart female with a law degree who is going to present the problem, who to blame, and then a solution, as opposed to just, you know, everything is bad.
So it's an interesting shakeup at Fox News. We'll see how it plays out. It looks like they've tried to position it in such a way that it creates some, you know, some sense of internal fighting. But initial responses from Sean Hannity, you know, he's come out and said, look, I can't say much, but everyone's going to end up happy with this. I have a feeling Fox pumped this up a little bit to get some buzz going around the change, and I guess we'll see in a few weeks, or I believe next month, exactly how this all shakes out.
Yeah, do you think that the Drudge Report, Matt Drudge is the first one to report this, do you think that there's any chance that that just was an accidental scoop? I mean, it's clear Ailes probably sent him a text message.
Right, I'm sure it was is scooped and told to pump up, and that's what they did. And we'll see how it plays out. I'd imagine everyone's going to end up happy again. Sean Hannity's got the second highest rated show on cable news, and of course, all the other players involved. I mean, Fox News is the most successful cable news show or cable news outlet in the country right now, and so if they're not going to completely spoil to that kind of success, I'd imagine the shuffle up is ends up being a good thing for all involved, and the initial buzz is just that, it's just buzz. On the opposite end of the spectrum, MSNBC has taken an interesting course correction as their ratings continue to actually plummet, and it looks like Alec Baldwin, the actor Alec Baldwin, will be getting his own show on MSNBC. Guys, what's the initial response to this?
What time of the day is his show going to air?
I don't think they've released any details like that yet. They've just they're just slowly leaking out that Baldwin will get his own show. Of course, he's the liberal, completely outspoken actor who also likes to go on racial and homophobic tirades on Twitter every once in a while as well. So we're going to see how that measures out, especially when it could end up that Rachel Maddow could be either the lead-in or for his show or vice versa. And it just seems like it's just poised to cause problems within their stable of hosts. What do you guys think?
Well, I think Chris Hayes is like watching cardboard. And his glasses make him look like he has the saddest eyes on the face of the planet.
You don't think the Hubble telescope looks good on his face?
No, not at all. I would actually watch the Alec Baldwin show, and I would probably enjoy it. I think he clearly has a lot of personality. I would enjoy watching him call people rude little pigs. I don't know how many, if you guys have listened to his podcast, he does out of, I think it's WNYC, an NPR station in New York City. He does a weekly Sunday interview show that's put out on podcast, and it's actually really, really good. It's really interesting. He especially is great at interviewing other entertainers. He's good at asking the right questions. He has a lot of skill. And so what I think they would probably do is they would probably put him up against Piers Morgan. And that would probably, is that the Rachel Maddow slot? I don't watch MSNBC either. But I think that's the 9 o'clock slot. So maybe they'd move Maddow up to 8 and then put Baldwin on at 9. And they would try to make Alec Baldwin the new Larry King, because Piers obviously is not going to last much longer. And there's going to be a glut of, you know, interview style shows, and there is obviously an opening there, and Alec Baldwin could fill that. And I think even though he is liberal, he is not the type of liberal that Piers Morgan is, where Piers Morgan is a dick about it, and he has no charisma, he's unlikable, and he's just a twit, to use his native language. And Alec Baldwin is not that. Alec Baldwin, you know, sits there and calls his 12-year-old daughter a rude little pig, and then next week you're like, yeah, but he was funny in 30 Rock. You know? Like, you want to forgive the guy for being a buffoon. And I think they bring him on to kind of fulfill the next, you know, decade or two of the Larry King slot. So he wouldn't have, like, a Rachel Maddow-type show with a lot of, you know, produced news. It would be him talking to stars and other entertainers like his radio show.
He wasn't very nice in Team America World Police. But what I would like to see them do with the show is no promotion whatsoever, and then one morning, sneak Morning Joe into the nighttime, like primetime block, and have Alec Baldwin air when Morning Joe is supposed to air. So people get up with their cup of coffee, they turn on MSNBC, they're ready to watch Joe Scarborough, and you see Alec Baldwin and he says, "This isn't Morning Joe. Coffee is for closers." Slams his coffee down on the table.
No.
The end.
No.
You don't think that's going to happen?
No, Joe.
No. Okay. Fair enough.
Where's the rim shot?
If you are MSNBC, though, are you concerned that...
Hold on, Ryan. Joe, is this the family name that you want to leave to your children?
This body of work that your kids will listen to in years gone by, they're just going to look back and say, what was my dad thinking?
I'm going to say that I did these gentlemen a big favor by adding some comic relief to the show.
That's debatable. I would like to know how you have two children after that joke.
If your game is so successful, sir, I would like to know how you do not.
Whoa.
That's a fair point.
I just want to know why you guys don't have two like me. That's all.
I do have two.
He does have two.
Oh, no.
Boom. Way to know your friends, buddy.
Right?
Ryan Ripley is a terrible friend.
I am a terrible host.
We just work together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're MSNBC, let's get the train back on the tracks. If you're MSNBC, are you concerned that the Baldwin show, and we'll call it that for lack of a title at this point, are you concerned that the Baldwin show is one tirade away from being completely slammed off the air by angry listeners? You know, if he does one more racial joke, if he just sends out a horrible tweet that bashes the gay or lesbian community, do you think that...
Ryan, the Melissa Harris Perry show is already one giant racial joke.
Yeah, that's true. So, you're right. There is a precedent for that acceptance.
Are you really asking us, are you worried about MSNBC losing credibility?
No, I'm just curious if we're going to see a lot of clips from Alec Baldwin on this show in the future as he just says some very ridiculous things. And I think the answer is going to be yes, which is good for us. It'll give us plenty to talk about. It's almost like a comedian or a media critic's dream to have a guy like Baldwin pick up a show.
He has flames of rage, and I don't think you're going to be sitting in that situation and have flames of rage. But I do think at the end of the show, he'll have some sort of special comment, and that's when you're going to get the Olbermann-like clips, you know, you, sir, are a tyrant.
Very good. All right, guys, it'll be fun to see how those shakeups play out. There's been another shakeup in the media world, but back into the old school print media. And what, of course, I'm talking about is Jeff Bezos buying the Washington Post. Or, I'm sorry, Bezos for the Spangles out there. Bezos bought the Washington Post for a paltry $250 million, which some are saying is somewhat an inflated price. However, it is actually less than 1% of Bezos' net worth. So it is it's a drop in the bucket for Mr. Bezos. He's picking up one of the most respected, at least historically respected, newspapers in the world. It is the lifeline of the D.C. world. It will have quite a bit of influence on future politics. Now, this could be, as some have pointed out, a return of the patrons underwriting the media, as Bloomberg, an excellent Bloomberg article that will be in the show notes, points out, or it could be a spin in a new direction for the newspaper industry. This is an industry, of course, that is dying, according to many accounts, and to see a person like Jeff Bezos jump in and purchase a major paper, that's got to mean that he's got an idea or a plan to solvency. What do you guys think?
Well, I hope that's the case. Some of the articles kind of insinuated that he was just going to sit back in his Washington home and let someone else run the company now that he's purchased it. And it's got to be a little bit more than that. He has to come in with an innovative strategy if he wants this thing to be successful. Otherwise, he just spent $200 million to plan a funeral.
He is a revolutionary delivery system person. I mean, he in the deal, he has no editorial control. He has no control over content, which is good. I mean, he does control who he signs the paychecks over to. I mean, so that does give you some control if you're saying, you're fired. And then he brings in his own people. He is rumored to be a libertarian-leaning person, a fiscal... You know, I think Ryan said a libertarian Democrat. So that would be good if he could bring in. I think there's a huge opening for libertarian media, obviously, and putting some libertarian voices on the Washington Post editorial board would be enormous. But Bezos is a delivery guy. He's not a content guy. And the reason that news is, you know, that newspapers especially are kind of falling behind, it's news is not a broadly popular thing. So changing the delivery system if the content isn't right is not going to be necessarily an enormous thing. But the Washington Post, which is, after the Hendricks County Flyer, my favorite newspaper, I don't know how, you know, they've been very forward-thinking in how to deliver the news. They, you know, have the TV department. They have, you know, multiple ways. Right now, throughout the summer, you can get the newspaper free on the iPad. They have some great apps. They're willing to try stuff, whereas other newspapers are afraid to try anything. The Washington Post will give it a shot and see what works and what sticks. So I think that culture is going to fit well with Bezos, and it's going to have to, because he is he's going to certainly shake things up and change it. But he's going to be a delivery system guy. He's going to change how the delivery system is news. And I think he could be revolutionary. I think he could be the William Randolph Hearst of the 21st century and say, here is how the news is going to be delivered for the next 100 years, just like Hearst was. But is the future of news in the newspaper genre? I don't know. I think that the future of news is really in the vein of Reason and The Atlantic and The New Yorker and, you know, the National Review and The Nation. I think those news magazine websites with a printed weekly companion is probably where the news is going to be. That's the future. You get the news, you know, the facts accompanied with an opinion. And that's really what we've tried to do with We're Libertarians. We're, you know, obviously have no funding, so we kind of do it on our own time. And, you know, it costs me money to run the network and the website. But we want to be a libertarian national review because we believe that's the future of news, not necessarily a newspaper, or a cable news, or a TV station. Mm-hmm. So
now, if this had been any other paper and any other buyer, would this have been as big of a story as it's become?
I think so, yeah. Especially because I think we're seeing a trend where the wealthy are starting to, not starting to, but have been buying up media outlets, and I think this is just another step in that progression.
Well, I would say that the owner of the Red Sox bought the Boston Globe to keep it, you know, locally controlled, and that was a one-day headline. The Bezos is, you know, a week's worth of news around this heritage newspaper that everybody wants to work for. You know, it's second after the New York Times in setting news trends. And it, of course, has the heritage of the Woodward and Bernstein and breaking the news, and it's in the nation's capital. So it's a heritage paper. You know, there are two brands in newspapers that are really significant. Well, three. There's the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and the New York Times, and to some extent the Chicago Tribune and LA Times. So I think the fact that it's one of the big three, coupled with the fact that the guy who created the Kindle is buying it, is mm-hmm. what makes this big news.
But I think he's also more than just the guy who made the Kindle. I mean, I love my Kindle. I think it's one of the greatest purchases I've ever made as far as a technology gadget's concerned. He's the guy that transformed shopping, right? I mean, Bezos changed the way that we buy things. I don't know about you guys. I buy most of my items off of Amazon.com. I would rather go to the site, read the reviews, see the pictures, pick out what I want, you know, add it to my cart, you know, and have it shipped here, then go to the store. And along with that, the media delivery that they've innovated through Amazon Prime, where you can now watch, you know, video and TV shows straight off of a device or a computer. I think this could be a bigger story because he's revolutionized so many different verticals. You know, not only has he changed shopping, he's changed books, he's changed the way that we buy gadgets and gizmos. He's also changed the content delivery for other mediums. I'm expecting a major shift in how we digest or consume news, and I'm hoping that that's the case. The Guardian actually had an excellent article along that vein as well that will be in the show notes, along with the other articles that we've discussed, where they're basically saying, look, this is a brand new business, realizing that and understanding that. That the past owners can't possibly compete. They've stepped aside. They've let in a new breed of owner like Jeff Bezos to step in and make a historical transformation of a dying industry. And I think if that doesn't happen, this purchase is going to be suspect.
Yeah, I think that I hope that you're right. I hope that it does revolutionize the way that we digest news. But at this point, I think it's kind of apples and oranges in terms of how this is going to translate to news The genius that he's created with Amazon.com. I don't think anybody doubts the genius that is Amazon. But how is that going to translate into running a newspaper like the Washington Post? And that's what I kind of have my suspicions or my doubt in regards to, because to me at this point, this seems like less of an interesting story and more like a Mark Cuban or just some billionaire playboy that likes to buy things. He likes to have toys. It's a status thing for him to say, I own this. But what does it actually do for the product? We'll see. He has had failed investments in the past.
It might get Bezos a guest spot on the Shark Tank. Uh-huh. Could get him there.
or the show report.
Let's get him here.
He's considered the Steve Jobs of our generation because he is so revolutionary in these delivery systems. Everything that you listed, Ryan, is not about the content. It's about the delivery system. And so if the content's going to remain the same, people want less of what the Washington Post is offering. People are spending less time reading newspapers than they are reading magazines or reading... Well, that's not true. Actually, magazines have the lowest time spent in that medium. But news sites are off the charts. They're the only medium of news that is growing, news websites. Everything else, TV and radio news are kind of staying steady, but newspapers are plummeting. Your average person, it's gone from 54 minutes of reading a newspaper down to about 30 minutes of reading a newspaper. Magazines have gone from like 20 minutes reading a magazine down to 14 minutes of reading a magazine. So, print is dead, but that content might not be. And I think it ties into a little bit of what we'll talk about with CNN. It's what kind of content are you creating? What kind of content is demanded by people? And, everybody wants... they want things, and Amazon has everything on the planet for sale, and it's more convenient, it's a little bit cheaper to get it delivered, so why not use it? The Kindle, it's cheaper and easier to get the content delivered to your Kindle. But is the content that the Washington Post will produce, is that something that people are going to want? I don't know if, formatting everything for a website or a tablet is going to make it more appealing. So
mm-hmm. Now the Ron Paul Institute did throw out kind of a contrarian story where basically they outlined a 10-year $600 million contract that Amazon.com currently has with the CIA to provide cloud services from the Amazon cloud for the CIA data centers. Their concern in the article, which again is in the show notes, is that there could be a conflict of interest here. How can the Bezos-owned Washington Post correctly or accurately report on the CIA when his other company, of course, Amazon.com, has a $600 million contract with that agency? And so they've raised issues like this. And I'm wondering what you guys think about the idea that these businesses, while they have been purchased separately, there could be some mixing or conflicts of interest here that could potentially modify the content.
Joe, you work for a radio station in sales, right?
Sure.
Okay, how many people would you say work in the radio station in the cluster that you work in?
In the sales cluster?
In sales and programming, and then we'll make a total of it.
Oh, 13.
Okay, so 13 in the sales area, and then how many total work in the building?
In the entire building, let's say 50.
50? Okay. So those 13 salespeople, how often do they go over and tell programming how they should do things?
We don't.
Right. And what would happen if you tried to do that?
We would probably get yelled at.
Right. So you've got a building of 50 people where there is a firewall separating sales and content creation in the let's call it the creative space, I guess, for lack of a better term. And then let's apply that to a multinational corporation like Amazon, a growing corporation where the only thing that connects the two is the owner. Amazon is not buying the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos is buying the Washington Post. And Bezos mm-hmm. is on top of Amazon, and he's also the owner of the Post. The corporation of Amazon does not own the corporation of the Washington Post. There is a 100% chance that the people who run the cloud services of Amazon will never meet the content creators of the Washington Post. So it's a it's an interesting question to raise, but it's probably nothing to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, if something were to, I guess, merge, then it would be a matter of top-down something coming from Bezos himself on both sides. And that's why I just want people to look at his motive. What is the reason that he's making this purchase? Does he really see it as a good investment, or does he just like to spend money? I think it's just kind of a frivolous expenditure at this point. If you look at some of the things that he's bought, he's fascinated with space, so he purchased some land in West Texas and is trying to create a private spacecraft for himself, where he's trying to build a giant clock inside of a mountain that's going to last for 10,000 years. Like, that kind of stuff, just, you're investing in things that are, you know, if it was Washington doing it, it would be pork barrel spending, you know?
Right.
And with him, it's just, I don't know, it just seems like he's that guy going around the monopoly board, and even though the other two railroads are already purchased, he wants to buy that third one. Not because he really needs it, but because it's just interesting to say that he owns a railroad.
Yeah, I think he's also contractually obligated to not control the content of the Post. So he could call the editor of the paper and say, you know, hey, don't talk bad about the CIA. And they can just ignore him. So,
sure, but there is some influence that comes along with,
of course, he signs
those
paychecks. Right.
Well, and that is an interesting point, guys, because along with the Washington Post, Bezos is inheriting the, I believe there's a union that covers many of the workers within the newspaper. He's also inheriting many of the current the managerial staff, which, again, contractually he's not allowed to influence directly. You know, how does an innovator like Bezos, how do you think he'll mix into a kind of a traditional work environment that he does not have necessarily full control of, like he does with Amazon? You know, at Amazon, he calls all of his employees Amazonians, and they do a lot of interesting and innovative things. When you have an old media model that involves the unions and other organizations, how much of a hindrance to innovation do you think that could be?
There is a great podcast called It's All Journalism. There's another great podcast called The Long Form Podcast, and also Matt Lewis and the News. Those three podcasts interview the people who make up the news. The Long Form Podcast just did an interview with Janet Reitman, who wrote the Rolling Stone cover article. And the It's All Journalism podcast talked to the former ombudsman of the Washington Post. They talked to the person who ran the video services department for the Washington Post. And every time I hear somebody from the Post interviewed, they all say, you know, it's a lot of young creative people who are energetic about changing the way that the news is delivered. And we're excited about trying to find new ways to deliver it. And I can't imagine how excited those people are right now. You know, it's a lot of 30-somethings who work in the news department ready to make a change. And, you know, now they have an ally at the very top who is willing to make changes. The Graham family may not have been willing to make changes because, well, you know, hey, Katherine Graham and Ben Bradley broke the Woodward and Bernstein story. Well, what have you done for me lately? You know, it's the 21st century, not the 20th, and we need a forward thinker at the top, and maybe they didn't have that. But, you know, like I said, the Post was willing to try stuff, so I think it's going to work out okay.
Well, it's certainly a transformational moment for the Post, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Going back to the TV side of the media world, or the cable news side of the media world, it seems that CNN is also seeking a transformation that almost a resurgence as they linger towards the bottom of the ratings pile. And we've touched on this a little bit. Last week we talked about Jake Tapper reporting on Benghazi. During a recent episode of The Situation Room, Arwa Damon conducted an interview with a suspect in the Benghazi case where it was revealed that that person was not at all nervous about, you know, being approached by the U.S. government or being tracked or anything like that. Following that interview, Drew Griffin reported from also with CNN. He reported that over 30 CIA agents were on the ground in Libya during the attacks, and that these agents are under pressure to not talk to the media or Congress, even going as far as giving them new names and identities, and really exposing some obstructionism within the CIA towards congressional oversight and the American people. Even Aaron Burnett, who I think we all respect as a well-regarded journalist, would you guys agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
We got head nods and a yeah from Chris. That's good radio, boys.
Eat it.
Even Aaron Burnett.
I am the publisher of the We Are Libertarians. I will fire you. I will no longer sign your check if you keep giving me that business.
Oh, those $0 checks keep bouncing, Chris. I'm not sure what else you can do. However, that's fine. I quit. End of podcast.
All right, this has been the show report where the news breaks, we break it again.
The last breaking story. So anyways, Erin Burnett, I think we all liked her. Joe nodded, Chris said a yeah. She's even now going after Jay Carney and his perpetual deflection machine and the inability of the Obama administration to even give a straight answer on the simplest of questions. In one of her latest episodes, she said that if you're asking about food, you can get a direct answer. They love to talk about the menu, but other than that, you're just going to get a lot of nonsense and referrals to other departments. I'm wondering, guys, is this CNN trying to become relevant? And we know that they float at the bottom of the ratings list each week. We know that even though they're hiring, people like Anderson Cooper, people like Aaron Burnett, people like Jake Tapper, they have respected journalists, but they're just floundering. And I'm wondering if these new talking points that they're accepting, these new approaches to investigative journalism, is this their attempt to pull out of the gutter and to get back into the once prominent position I think that they held as a cable news outlet?
I think that they have to. I mean, there was a time where I think just from a matter of perspective, you had Fox, your conservative-leaning news outlet. You had MSNBC, which is your liberal-leaning news outlet. And CNN was just considered kind of bland. It was a place that was just kind of there. It was boring. It was maybe past its time. We didn't have the flash of the other news outlets. And so I think that they found a way to reinvent themselves without really changing much other than the content that they're putting out, and that is to actually talk about news stories. And to shed the Nancy Grace of old and get into things that people actually want to know about, need to know about, and that the other two outlets aren't reporting, which is good, because if it's if they do give the people something to talk about, it could mean that the other two mainstream media news outlets that are right next to them start to talk about interesting topics as well, and then maybe the mainstream media starts to actually report the news.
They have a new boss there, Jeff Zucker, who was in charge of NBC. He is most famously responsible for putting NBC in last place with bad programming choices and the Conan Tonight Show debacle. That's sort of what he's best noted for. But, he probably was a smart choice for CNN because he came from an entertainment background. And he has a news background, too, because he was once in charge of the Today Show. He was in charge of the Today Show when the Today Show was the Today Show. I mean, now it's just sort of a sad shell of what it used to be. Back in the Bryant, Gumbel, What's-Her-Face, Perky...
They have great cooking segments, though, yeah, now, Chris.
Perky Katie Couric, and he was responsible for the Matt What's-His-Face hiring. I'm really on top of my game today, but Mittens is deciding to walk in front of the camera right now, so she's distracting me. So he was in charge of the Today Show when it was really hot, so he has a news and entertainment background, so he really was a smart hire for CNN. And he's done a couple things. He's brought on people who, even rabid partisans who are anti-power, generally anti-status quo, like myself, can look at a Chris Cuomo, he hasn't brought on Anderson Cooper, but Anderson, Aaron Burnett, he brought on Jake Tapper, people that you can look at and you go, okay, I have trust in them. They may not always be right, I may not always agree with their conclusions, but I think they try to do a good job of being journalists, and that's a rare quality. And CNN does really well when there's breaking news. They're a news division. They were once well-regarded because they were first. And then Fox News came on, and then MSNBC copied Fox News and started doing opinion-based programming as opposed to hard news. And that formula really seemed to work well. Well, how do they fit in this new model? If they don't want to be an opinion-based, because where do they go? You've got the left and you've got the right. Well, where do you fit in? They have decided that they're going to fill the investigative journalism niche. And isn't it crazy that investigative journalism and hard news is a niche in this day and age? But it is, and so they're filling that role.
Doesn't that mean, though, that they're going to have to get Piers Morgan off of that network? Doesn't he diminish the value of everything that they're trying to do?
Yeah, 100%, and I think that's in the works. I mean, it's, you know, it's a financial thing. How long can we run out the contract before we don't have to pay him a bunch of money?
Yeah.
Chris, why do you need an AR-15?
I don't know. Because Piers Morgan has a TV show. And I would just want to put a gun in my mouth every time I see him on TV. So they're also doing some interesting things. Like, I'm really hoping that they're not going to go the route of, like, the History Channel with some of the, you know, potential scripted programming. Because what I don't want to happen is primetime on CNN is reality TV shows. You know, yeah. And there's a potential that that could happen if they get a reality TV show of some sort on the weekends, and then that works, then that's what they'll put on because that's what they can sell. Just like the.
So do you think we could get the Real Housewives of K Street coming to CNN?
It's possible. It totally is possible.
Sweet.
But
I'd watch it. Can you imagine how interesting that'd be? Come on.
I will say I caught Anthony Bourdain in Libya this past weekend on CNN, and it was fantastic. It was Anthony Bourdain, a reality TV chef, going through Libya, interviewing people about the situation, and I learned more about what it's like on the ground in Libya than any other thing that I've consumed, and I thought it was great. And, you know, documentaries, I love to watch documentaries. You learn a lot from documentaries, and if somebody like CNN can put some money into documentaries and make them really well done and show, you know, here's infotainment, but legit infotainment, and it's not going to be outrageously liberal, you know, like capitalism is all bad in most of these documentaries. You know, it can be a little fair and balanced. I think they've got a winner on their hands because I will watch that all day long.
Chris, I'm looking forward to keeping up with the McCains.
Yeah.
That's what I want to watch. Lindsey Graham on the runway. I think you've got something here with the reality shows on CNN. This could be compelling stuff, guys.
Really?
No.
I was gonna say I was about to look at Chris in the Google Hangout window and say, is this really the legacy that you want to leave behind for your family?
I am completely kidding. The Real Housewives of K Street or Keeping Up with the McCains could be two of the worst ideas that I've ever shot out.
I'm thinking like a Duck Dynasty type show with Rand and Ron Paul would be fantastic.
I'd watch that. That's a winner.
There'd be so many neocons and liberals around the country shaking their heads and going, it was just a natural fit. I'm surprised they didn't do it sooner.
So now, as CNN attempts to pull itself out of the ratings gutter, there is a concern, I think. And there was an article on Mediaite that talked about the access to power and the potential punishments for speaking badly about power. So, of course, the CNN's newfound willingness to report on the stories that could be troublesome for the Obama administration, that does have some reporters worried that their access to the president and members of his administration could be in jeopardy, which are, I think, very valid concerns. Is access granted and revoked based on the content of the stories being told? Are loyal reporters rewarded with exclusives and sanctioned leaks based on their willingness to, I guess, play ball? And I think those are interesting questions that CNN's probably balancing in their, you know, they've got their war room set up and they're trying to talk about the news of the day. And do you guys think those questions are getting bounced around pretty hard? Or at this point, if you're going to go the investigative journalism route, do you just push that to the back and not worry about it?
I think if you're going to be in certain places, there are absolutely unspoken rules or guidelines as to what you do or do not ask if you want to continue to have an audience with the people you're interviewing. White House people, we mentioned last week the newsroom and the guy that was on the Mitt Romney bus for the press, and how he couldn't ask any of the questions that he really wanted to ask, because if he wasn't asking the fluff questions or receiving the fluff answers and taking them at face value, that, you know, he wasn't going to get anywhere else with that campaign. And, you know, I learned the other day that even on a local level, the Republican Party has some unspoken rules or guidelines that an employee of the party, even if they disagree with the vote of an elected Republican official, they can't vocalize that. They can't tell people, I disagree with it. They will be let go from their position.
I thought
that was pretty intense.
Yeah, I mean, I felt that way when I was with the Libertarian Party of Indiana. I mean, it's just common sense. It's not like anybody ever said that you can never say, I mean, I go out and I start saying bad things about the Libertarian Party of Indiana or the Libertarian Party in general or any one of our candidates running.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would it have flown for you, Joe, as a candidate for the 2nd District in Congress if the executive director of the party was saying, well, I just don't think Joe's that great of a candidate?
In public. Sure, sure.
You know, if I was posting on Facebook, you know, Joe's totally wrong about that mass transit plan. You know,
yeah.
it just doesn't.
Joe, you were wrong about that.
Right.
Yeah, I didn't have any take on that. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but there are things that candidates will say that are maybe unlibertarian, but you're the executive director, a paid employee. You don't go out and bash your candidate and say, I disagree with that. Maybe you can say privately.
I put the local Democrats. See, and now I'll admit I did run as a Democrat years ago.
That's why Greg Lenz has zero faith in you, Ryan.
I know he doesn't trust me at all. But I finally did come around, and I am a card carrying member of the Libertarian Party now. However, when I did run for office, I did put the local party in a tight spot because I was very vocal about my opponent. I made some serious accusations and actually filed a complaint with the state police and the local prosecutor. And it does put people in, especially at the local level, because everyone's friends. It's not like people decide their friends based on political parties, especially in a town of 10,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone knows one another. And of course, there are some people that think, wow, this is a great thing that I was doing. Others are, you know, they're friends with my opponent and they were incredibly upset about just the scandal that was brewing. And so, of course, the local party had to stay pretty mum about the whole situation, unless they were looking to be supportive, in which in many cases they were very supportive. But they can't just come out and bash it. And on the flip side, you know, the local Republicans could not come out and say, well, there's a merit here or there isn't. I mean, they really had to put up a stonewall around the whole issue that really could have blown the lid off of the entire election. It would have been the first time in recent and even past memory that the minor party could have taken a seat on that council, and it almost happened. And so it was just an interesting situation where when you're dealing with power, when you're talking to power, the rules are very specific, and if you don't know those rules, you can really end up getting put through the meat grinder by either party.
It's not just that. It's human interaction. I mean, if you're in any sort of business and you say something bad about a coworker and then you walk in the next day, how's that human interaction going to work?
Right.
You know, and I remember when I was a Cub radio producer back in 04, 05, and I was interning on the morning show, and I said something like, I thought it was great. I thought, well, this is great. I'm really going after this local legislator who has a really stupid idea. And you know, I really just go overboard with what I'm saying, and Abdul kind of cleans it up and says, hey, what do you know, kid? And, you know, then stops during the break, cracks the little intercom between the two of us and goes, you know, we've got to work with these people, right? And I go, what do you mean? He goes, you can go on the air and you can say those sorts of things and you can be abusive towards people that in the local political arena, but how do you think that's going to work when you show up to their office and you want to get an interview with them? Or they have some information that you might need off the record. Do you think they're going to give that to you? Do you think they're going to have trust in you? Absolutely not. We've got to work with these people. Use your brain. And that never left me. I still think about it almost 10 years later. Because behind the scenes, you've got to build trust. If you're Ed Ed Helms. If you're Ed Helms from Fox News, I cannot think of Ed What's-His-Face's name, who's the White House correspondent for Fox News. But let's say Ed has an off-the-record conversation with Jay Carney and then goes and reports that in the evening. Do you think he's going to find out background information and off-the-record information that may not necessarily need to be reported to the American people for them to make a decision, but it helps shape his view of the situation because he has fuller information so then he can make a decision on how to report it in context? You need that as a reporter. You need that background information so you can understand in context what's happening so you can report the truth.
The whole thing is unfortunate. That's unfortunate that that's the kind of... I mean, there should be able to be at least the slightest disconnect where, you know what, if I work for one of these parties or if I work for a media outlet, you know, I might disagree with them on one issue, on one vote that this particular elected official made, and I should be able to be vocal about the fact that I disagreed with that one particular issue. It doesn't mean that I bash them on a personal level. It doesn't mean that I completely shred them apart in my program or shred them apart as an employee of a party. But I should at least be able to nudge the guy to the left of me and say, you know, I don't think I really agreed with how he or she went with that issue. And that shouldn't be a problem. And to hold such stringent laws or rules, whether they be written or unspoken, to the point where they would lose some sort of credibility or job based on having that opinion, that differentiating thought, that's problematic to me.
Joe, I think there's a good reason for those rules, and there's a recent, this week, issue that came up. I think Mitch McConnell has his campaign manager. His name is Ben... What's his last name? I want to say Swanson, but I don't think that's right. Mitch McConnell's campaign manager came over from the Rand Paul campaign in order to help Mitch McConnell get reelected. And, of course, that helps Rand Paul because those two, you know, they initially were not allies. But after Rand Paul won his Senate race in 2010, I believe it was 2010, Mitch McConnell got on board. And so those two are working together in Kentucky. And what was interesting was, you know, this campaign manager who came over from Rand Paul's campaign.
Are you talking about Jesse Benton?
Yes, I'm sorry, Jesse Benton, where he had to say that, you know, he's kind of holding his nose and working for Mitch McConnell. It was somewhat embarrassing for Rand Paul. It was embarrassing for Mitch McConnell. And, of course, they deflected it brilliantly with an Instagram photo of Mitch McConnell and Jesse Benton holding their noses together and laughing in a picture. But but still, those kind of things, those can wreck campaigns.
There is a difference between making a comment in regards to an individual and in regards to a position that an individual takes on a specific issue. That's where the line has to be drawn.
I think in either case, though, McConnell's opponent can jump on either statement and really use it against the candidate. And so I think there's those rules are there to – I agree, Joe, that as individuals we should be able to have our own viewpoints. But when you make a decision to put yourself in a certain situation, whether that's a member or employee of a party or a campaign, I think you take on the responsibility of holding your tongue and you lose some of your individualism just based on joining that kind of team.
Well, I think as the guy who put that out there, who put that Benton thing out there, that's background, that's off-the-record information that may help you shape Jesse Benton's decisions so you understand where he comes from better that could help you in your reporting. Is that essential information that will help a voter at the ballot box, or is that sensational? I look at it and I go, I don't think that's information that I necessarily would need as a voter in Kentucky. I don't really care if Jesse Benton doesn't like Mitch McConnell. He didn't say anything other than, you know, I'm maybe not crazy about all of his policies. Well, I mean, I've worked with candidates, you know, that have run for Congress in the 2nd District where I'm not crazy about all of their policies, but I don't go out and say anything like that. You know, so it's you. But what's the greater good as Jesse Benton looks at it? What's the greater good? Do you get somebody that you agree with 90% of the time because you're going to have a greater chance of getting your guy elected who you think can do the greater good? Or do you just stand on your principles alone And if you're the guy on the other end of the phone, was that necessary to put out there, or was it just sensationalism? So you just got this hot tip that you feel you can use to get some, you know, make a little bit of a name for yourself.
Well, no one's ever going to talk to that guy again. I mean, he right. shotgunned out a personal quip that was supposed to be off the record. Who's actually going to give him any kind of inside information again? And I think that rounds out, you know, Chris, I think you rounded out the whole conversation excellently with that. That fine, he got one inside tip. He embarrassed a staffer. He might have slightly embarrassed a candidate, but who's going to take him seriously in the future?
100%.
So we also have in the show notes an article from Salon.com where I believe they risked access, and perhaps it's in a good way, but the story was essentially that, you know, the recent closing of embassies, that there is no true terror threat. They just want the administration wants to create an atmosphere of fear to continue to justify NSA surveillance. And it was also a very poignant stab at the compliant media who continues to go along with this. And so Salon.com, who is typically not one of our favorite sources of news, kind of put a flag in the ground and said, or a stake in the ground and said, look, you know, this is it's a red herring story. There's nothing bad going on. This is a way to prop up the intelligence community. And where is the media involved in this? And I was wondering, real quick, guys, we'll wrap up this access to power. Has Salon.com really damaged their ability to get, you know, whether or not it was already damaged in the first place is probably a good question too, but have they just put themselves completely out of the circle of media sources that will have any kind of positive relationship with the administration? And is that important?
I think it's a question of whether or not you think taking a strong position that you believe in is more important than living to fight another day. You know, that's, you could relate that back to LavaBit and that website this week saying we're going to shut down our internet server rather than giving all this information from our users to the intelligence community. They took a strong stand, and they're no longer going to be able to move forward as a business. But what's more important, taking that position or moving forward and complying and doing what's necessary to live on and do business for another day? I think it's taking a position. That's what you can be proud of in the long run. Doesn't mean you can't get back on your feet. But you know, if Salon takes a hit for that, then I would say they said what they thought was right.
Joe, I 100% agree with you. And I actually wonder why this compliant media has not gone to Mark Zuckerberg as soon as that LavaBit story broke and said, hey, Mark, why don't you just take Facebook down for a day or two in protest of the NSA surveillance?
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine the outcry from the public? If we lost Facebook because the NSA won't stop siphoning data from it,
there's your revolution right there.
There would be new legislation overnight. Mark Zuckerberg could single-handedly change these laws just by simply saying, we're no longer going to comply, we're wiping the data and shutting it down. Can you imagine how fast they would come back from their August recess to change the law? My question is, why isn't the media asking that same question to Larry Ballmer, to Mark Zuckerberg, to Larry Ellison, you know, all of these other tech giants who are totally compliant with the NSA's activities? Where are these questions, and why is this compliant media not jumping on this this LavaBit story?
100%. Yeah.
So if we are libertarians, this, you know, extremely successful libertarian news conglomerate, down the road, if the CIA representative, you know, Joe Blow, came and said, hey, Chris, we want the information of all your subscribers, and we want to be able to trace all this, you know, X amount of information based off of them, would you choose to shut down We Are Libertarians and the WAL radio network, or would you give it to them so that the libertarian voice could continue to be heard in the broadcast community?
I would write a post and post it up, and I mean, we're not doing hosting, so we're not governed by any kind of rules or anything. And the closest thing that could happen is, you know, Bluehost, who houses all of our web hosting and all of our podcasts and everything, I would switch host. I'd find somebody who doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And to the best of my knowledge, Bluehost does not cooperate with the federal government. But I'd shut it down. I mean, as much as I love doing this, and, you know, you blast it out there that this is why we shut down, and, you know, you create something new somewhere else because you're going to have a lot of street cred. I think Salon.com is one of the most idiotic news sites on the planet. Like, they really, they love to just troll. Like, they love to troll libertarians. You know, it's one thing to do the occasional troll post on, let's say, Dan Coates, but it's another thing to consistently just post stuff that is so unreasonable and lacks any kind of credibility. Salon is just ridiculous.
Hey, we have to work with these people. Wait, no, we don't. Proceed.
You know what, guys? I think from the show report, why don't we be the outlet that poses a public question to Mark Zuckerberg? Why don't we be the outlet that says, and I'll do this right now, Mark Zuckerberg, why are you complying with the NSA? When a gentleman who, a private individual who's running LavaBit is willing to shut down his entire business to give up his means of income and the way that he supports his family in order to stand up for a principle, why are you, Mr. Multi-Billion Dollar Mark Zuckerberg, compliant with these requests? Why do you trample the Fourth Amendment? And why do you refuse to be the agent of change that this country needs?
Yeah, Mark. I think what we should do is create a Facebook event on the We Are Libertarians page requesting that Zuckerberg shuts down Facebook for 24 hours in protest of the NSA forcing them to give access to their information. So, and Google Plus, I think they should just shut down Google Plus permanently as a way to protest the NSA.
All right, guys, so there's our activist statement of the week. I would encourage our tens and tens of listeners, pass on the message that there is a way that a lot of these scandals as concerning the NSA can go away. Let's all challenge Mark Zuckerberg to be the agent of change that he claims he so wants to be, and let's move this forward. Now, guys, it's my favorite part of the podcast. Joe, I know this is your favorite part of the podcast. Can you guess what's next? This
Jay
is what
Carney.
We like to call. Jay Carney said what? We need some music because I just blew out a bunch of eardrums of people. But for now, it's just going to be the zany Jay Carney said what kind of intro. And here we go. When asked about the impact. Well, hold on. Since we are on episode 7 and we've been gaining listeners each week, let me step back. Jay Carney said what is a game that we play where we like to pick on the White House press secretary, Jay Carney, just a little bit. He gets a lot of questions and each day from the press gaggle. We take a question that we found interesting or that I found interesting or at least had a good answer to, and I make up two other alternate answers to that question. So we have Jay's real answer along with two alternate answers. I pose the question to Chris and Joe. They try to decide which answer is the true answer that Jay Carney gave. And then we go to the clip and listen to see if they were able to predict correctly what the spin master himself, Jay Carney, said. And so far, I think, Joe, you are the only one to have a correct answer. Is that right?
That is right.
So Joe is leading Chris 1-0, but they've also both missed quite a few other ones. So this week, let's see if we can get Chris Spangle on the board, and let's get him tied up with Joe. What do you say, Chris? You ready? Woot, I like it. All right, so when asked about the impact of Edward Snowden on the souring relationship between the United States and Russia, what did Jay Carney say? Answer number one, it's a fluid situation that we are keenly interested in directing towards the eventual return of Edward Snowden to U.S. soil. Mr. Snowden, as you are all well aware, has been charged with 3 felonies related to illegally leaking information, and he should stand trial here and face the consequences of his actions. That's answer one. Answer two, I'm going to have to direct you to the president with those questions. I really cannot speak for the White House or his administration. It would only be speculating on the information known by this president and his staff and its interpretation of such information. Number three, look, we have a lot of fish to fry, if you will, when it comes to Russia. We have a lot of issues to engage with the Russians over. This is not the focus of our engagement with Russia, but it's not something that we're dropping by any means. So answer one, fluid situation. They want Snowden to come back and stand trial. Answer two, the press secretary doesn't speak for the administration, has to direct you to the president. Answer three, we're going to a fish fry, but we're not going to drop this Edward Snowden thing.
Number one.
Yeah, number one's the only plausible one. Number three is too creative for Jay Carney. Number two is just, you know.
He's saying he can't do his job, which
right,
he wouldn't admit
yeah.
to.
He wouldn't admit to that. He'd have to refer you to the press.
So number one, final answer.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to the tape. Let's see what he said.
Look, we have a lot of fish to fry, if you will, with the Russians. We have a lot of issues to engage with the Russians over. And there is a 2+2 ministerial meeting tomorrow here in Washington. And
I'll spare you guys the rest of that
I
comment.
I cannot believe it.
Really?
Oh, you two are goose-egged again. This is why it's my favorite
really?
Game. Really? Number one was nonsense that I came up with late last night in preparation of the show. Number three was the right answer, guys. He was going to a fish fry, but they're not going to forget about talking about Snowden. So
you did a good job with that because I was listening to number one, and I was like, you know, I swear I heard that somewhere this week. That has to be the one. I probably heard him say it somewhere.
No, it is the fish fry answer. Number one was a nonsense. Number two, I was trying to get you guys to laugh with the directing a question to the president instead of the press secretary, but I failed. But number three was the right answer. So again, Joe, you are still leading Chris 1-0 in the Jay Carney Said What contest.
Yeah.
Guys, I think as I look at the clock, I think we are our seconds are ticking down and we are getting closer to being out of time. So I think, guys, that's it for this week. This is the news cycle and a lot of good stories, a lot of good shakeups, and it'll be fun to see how they play out, and I'm sure we'll continue to keep our tens and tens of listeners updated on exactly how some of these news stories play out. For those of you that would like to get a hold of us here at the Shill Report, leave us a message on the Facebook page, on the We Are Libertarians Facebook page, or the We Are Libertarians Twitter account with the #ShillReport hashtag. Find out what we left out of this week's episode on page two of the Shill Report, available at WeAreLibertarians.com. Listen in on iTunes or wall-radio.com to hear past episodes. The Shill Report can also be heard on Indiana Talks, and if you're joining us on Indiana Talks, thank you very much. And remember, folks, when the media breaks the news, the Shill Report is here to fix it. Good night, everyone.